All right, welcome to another edition of the Autumn Windbags. We talked to Raiders Films mastermind Kyle Cochran, who made us believe in the Raiders again. Seriously, listen to him talk, and you'll be completely optimistic about next season. We busted out our TI-83 calculators to do all the cap work and math, so you don't have to. And we built our ultimate roster. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD. Find your state of natural relaxation. And we absolutely love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you choose to listen to us on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. The hangover from football season being over has finally set in. Like, it feels real. You know, like, we're still kind of basking in the afterglow of the Super Bowl last week. But now it's like Sunday rolls around and I have to spend time with, like, my wife and family. Like, read a book. Like, maybe, you know, not have a good reason to start drinking at 10. It's really setting in, Soto.
Yeah, it's the calm before the storm. So we just got to ride it out. We got to ride this little section out. It's not optimal. It's not the best time of year. You know, it's kind of that funky in-between period. Only basketball's really going. I don't really watch basketball that much anymore. Baseball hasn't really started yet. It's tough right now. It's a tough part of the year. The draft talk.
So hockey's tough.
Yeah. You know, the draft stuff really hasn't gotten into the full swing yet. No combine this year.
The true off season doesn't really start for another month. It's all still just kind of like.
Yeah, like mid March.
Teams are working, but nothing's official.
Can't really do shit. Like, everything's got to be on the sneak.
This is a cool kind of like I'm always trying to look for the silver linings of COVID, because obviously it's like devastated everything in our lives. I had it, you had it, and it sucked. But one positive of COVID, we have FCS football coming up in February. You know, I'm down to watch some Montana schools, some North Dakota schools play some football in like late winter, early spring. I'm down for that, man.
Why the hell not?
Give it to me.
No.
Let's do it.
Why the hell not, man? Give me some football. That's what I want to see. That's what everyone wants to see. Even if it's two shitty schools going at it, as long as there's points being scored, I'm cool.
But the you know, one of the things about and thank God for you for mixed martial arts, because we've got fights every single weekend.
Jesus, every goddamn weekend.
You know, every weekend we got some fights. Like, I'm in Raider territory in Vegas every single weekend for these fights. So at least we got something going for us. But other than fights and crappy hockey. And essentially Division II football. There's a lot of moving parts for free agency and teams figuring out their roster, and cap space is being worked out. So we did the math, so you don't have to. I have all 55 total contracted players with their base salary, prorated bonus, guaranteed salary, cap number, dead money, all the stats in front of me. But first, before we do like the nerdy math part, you did some statistical research that you were bragging to me about before talking about Super Bowls. And I know, as much as I am hell bent on telling you that getting rid of Derek Carr isn't worth the risk, you're just as hell bent in telling me how getting rid of him is the way to go. So I appreciate the effort you're spending and the research you are doing to make me look like an idiot. What did you come up with?
Well, you know, I have a little egg on my face now. I'm not ashamed to say it.
Scrambled. Fried,
poached. Yeah. I do like me an Eggs Benedict, sir.
Oh, delicious.
Ah, so good. Man, especially the last, 7-8 years or so, if you want to win a Super Bowl, you got to have a top 10 defense. Mm-hmm. The lowest since 2013 has been 8, and that was this year, and also the 2014 Patriots. They were ranked 8th. Let's go down the list.
Which is still great. That would be the best Raiders defense in like 20
top
years.
10. in 92, these are the teams that did not have a top 10 defense that won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
The Giants in 92 were actually ranked 26, which is surprising. The 99 Broncos were 11.
Which is still good.
Which is still good. It was right outside the top 10. Yep. The 2000 greatest show on turf Rams were 31st, but they scored so many goddamn points.
I forgot how bad that defense was.
Yeah.
And this is scoring defense, right? The ranking
scoring defense. Yeah. Yeah. So they give up a lot of points. I mean, partially because they were scoring so quickly. I mean, the yeah. opponents
got they had a lot of turnovers, but they scored so many points that no,
it didn't really matter. Yeah. New England in 2002, they were 17th. And also again in 2005, they were ranked 17th. The Steelers in 2006 were 11, again, right outside the top 10. Steelers again in 2009 were 13th. The Ravens were 25 and 11, but actually, I'm sorry, that was the Giants with 25 in 2011. And the Ravens were 12th in 2012. We talked about that team. Ray Lewis was hurt most of the year. They still had generational players on all levels of defense.
Yep.
And that's pretty much it, man. Out of the last, 30 years, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So 9, and I mean, you can technically, 2 of those were right outside the top 10.
Yeah. But that's also like almost a third of the true. Super Bowl winning teams, right? So I think we 82% agree, Soto. We're just coming up with different ways to attack it. Like, of course we want our defense to be as good as possible, right? Like, no question about it. But this idea that, like, all right, we have to trade everything for a once in a generation quarterback to bail us out because our defense is never going to be top 7. It's like, let's not bail on one of the like 3 things that are working in Vegas, right? Like Derek Carr is one of the quarterback position. QB1 is one of the positions of the Raiders. You're like, okay, it's good. It's much better than average. We are set here when there's so many other things to worry about. It's just like, It's doable, right? It's possible. Almost a third of the last 30 teams had defenses outside of the top 10. We can make that part of the system work. The rock of the team is Derek Carr. Like, we could let him be him and just keep improving everything around. It's been tough, right? Like, banking on the Raiders having a great defense is, you know, it's like splitting aces. You know what I mean? It's like, we hope it happens, but you got to do it, but you can't help. It's not great, but like the alternative is getting rid of one of the few things on this team that's working.
All right. Put your hands up, both hands up. We're going to count. Okay. Your right hand is going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Your left hand is going to be non Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Here we go.
Which one's the hairiest palm?
It's not the left. It's not. 92, Jeff Hostetler, ranked 26 defense, non Hall of Fame quarterback. Okay.
This one.
John Elway, Denver, 99, 11th. That's a Hall of
Fame. He also lost a buttload of Super Bowls before.
But he made a buttload of Super Bowls. He was there a lot. Kurt Warner, 31st ranked defense, Hall of Fame quarterback. Tom Brady, 17, Hall of Fame. Roethlisberger, 11. Is he Hall of Fame? All right. Again,
I think he'll make it. He will. Every quarterback gets in the Hall of Fame.
Roethlisberger, 13. Hall of Fame. All right.
We're going back around.
6. Peyton. Peyton's younger brother, Eli, at 25. Not Hall of Fame.
I think he'll go, but he doesn't deserve to be. He has a 500
record. Let's make him a not Hall of Fame.
Okay, we'll make him a not. My arms are getting tired.
Okay, and then we have your boy, Flacco. With the Ravens.
Why is he my boy? Not all of them.
So that's 3. So it's you're twice as likely with a non top 10 defense to win if you have an elite level quarterback. Let's say elite level quarterback.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, can Carr be that elite level guy? Let's see.
Yeah,
another year under this offense,
the Raiders Super Bowl chances aren't black and white. You know what I mean? Like, we're kind of making it out to be, or it's either like an amazing defense or a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't think we're gonna have either, right? Or Derek Carr could be a Hall of Fame quarterback, right? If he wins 2 Super Bowls late, you know, all time everything for the Raiders, like, he'll go, you know. But like,
I I look back at this. I posed the question a couple of weeks ago, and I said, name me a quarter. Actually, it was a few weeks ago. Name me a quarterback who didn't start off well, but ended his career, like, not just a flash in the pan in 1 or 2 years, but, like, throughout a long stretch of time, becoming an elite quarterback. And I'm ashamed to say we don't have to look any further than our own organization, Jim Plunkett. Mm-hmm. It's been done. And he was just
Rich Gannon.
Got him off the scrap heap.
Rich Gannon.
Like I was going to say, he NFL had MVP. 1, 2 years.
Yeah. He had like 3 seasons of like legit Pro Bowl level.
The third year he got his neck broken.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So look, it's possible. And you know what? Derek Carr's not getting released on the scrap heap like Jim Plunkett was. Okay. Yeah. So it's possible with the right pieces around him. Maybe his balls might grow up a little bit more. He might be able to throw the ball a little bit deeper and, you know, maybe squeeze into a little tighter spots.
Maybe his hands grow a little bit and doesn't fumble. We're hoping. Jesus. Fingers crossed.
Well, if he has, you know, maybe another running back there, he doesn't have to run so much. But we'll see, man. I mean, it's possible. I'm having a lot more hope going forward that now I have more of a basis as to why I feel that the defense is going to improve by a big step next year.
Well, we talked to our guest, Kyle Cochran of Raider Films, about that very question. And we had a great, great discussion with Carl about all things Raiders, offense, defense, mindset stuff. We walked away from this interview, Soto, much more optimistic about every aspect of this team than when we walked in. And I think you will too. Take a listen. Here's Kyle Cochran. All right, joining us on the Autumn Windbags, he is the creator of Raider Films on YouTube, one of the best X's and O's Raider analysis that I've seen on the internet, Carl Cochran. He also played at Fresno State a little bit before the Derek Carr era, but full-on Raider fan and now a member of the Autumn Windbags. Thanks for coming on, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. So I was going through all your videos, and I love how you take – really integrated like elements, like, all right, should we go after JJ Watt? What's Henry Ruggs' future like? What can we do about the red zone? And you just give us like 12 to 15 minutes of what's happening. Let's start with Henry Ruggs, because I feel like he was one of the more controversial guys this season. Like, so many people like were excited for him. He had such high expectations. Not only did he not deliver just in general, but there were so many other rookie receivers that played so much better than him. What was your overall analysis of Ruggs in his rookie year?
He was hobbling. Mm-hmm. He was hobbling. He was playing on one leg. Remember week one against the Panthers, right? Mm-hmm. And that one play where he went out and he hurt his knee. And then he went out and he came back in. And then from that point on, he wasn't the same again. And I kind of know a little bit about knee injuries because I got one that's killing me right now.
Cold weather got you.
Okay. And I believe it was to his medial collateral ligament. Because what happened was, okay, he came back and he played the next couple of games, then he missed a couple of games, and he came back again. And they were using him as a decoy because, okay, When your medial collateral is jacked up, he's fast. So he's going to be fast. And he could be three-quarter speed and be faster than everybody else. So it's worth it to take him out there and run him deep and let him stretch the defense and then let, you know, hit everybody else underneath. And then hit him deep at times. But his problem is he couldn't plant his foot and go the other way. Mm-hmm. And that was what I noticed, because I saw him run routes at Alabama. I'm not going to say that he's Antonio Brown, but he ran pretty good routes when he was at Alabama. He could plant his foot and change directions explosively. He could do that. And then I saw him at training camp, and he was, bam, just planting that foot and going. And if you notice during the season, he wasn't planting his foot at all.
Yeah.
Every cut was rounded, or, you know, it was a speed cut where he just turned his hips and went. He didn't plant his foot at all. He didn't, you know, I think I saw him plant his foot one time, and that was the double move that he put on the Jets for that crazy touchdown for the win.
Yeah, it's worth throwing out your knee to get that W and stop a losing streak against a winless team.
Yeah, I said that Nelson Aguilar owes Ruggs a Rolls Royce or a Rolex or something, because he had his year because everyone was paying attention to Ruggs deep.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Oh, and not just Ruggs. Don't get it twisted. Waller, too.
Waller, too, yeah.
Because what happened? What happened in New England? They took
Waller away.
They took Waller away, right?
Yeah.
You can't do that when Ruggs on the field.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. But they took Waller away, and we got the Raiders got dealt with. But
we got ground down. We got grinded on. Yeah,
that too. But on offense, we couldn't. You know, we couldn't
do anything.
Couldn't do because you take Waller away. Now what? And
it's true.
You know, while Aguilar hadn't really established himself at that point, mm-hmm. and you know, no Ruggs stretch the field and take him away.
Yeah,
take the coverage away. That is.
Yeah. So let's talk about Aguilar. Like, Nelson Aguilar obviously was able to completely rehab his image with the Raiders this season as the number one wide receiver, you know, obviously outside the tight end, Darren Waller. But, you know, you had a whole video asking the question, like, all right, how far should the Raiders reach for Nelson Aguilar? And I think he would be best back with the Raiders. Obviously, you know, it's obvious and selfishly that I want to keep a good player. But when you think about it, like, there are so many good wide receivers in free agency right now. So many mock drafts have like 6, 7, 8 receivers going in round number one. The salary cap is going to be less because of COVID. I don't think he's going to be getting this $14 million contract from some, you know, $14 million a year from some other team. He knows he's going to be the number one receiver in Las Vegas. He knows John Gruden's system. We need a veteran wide receiver to help bring up these young guys. Like, I think I'm hoping we can get Nelson Aguilar for pretty cheap, Carl.
I'm hoping the same thing. Drew Gruden has known this kid since high school.
Yep.
And so this could go one of two ways. It's a
complicated situation.
I'll tell you why it's so complicated. Is this number one? Okay, is what you just said. They brought him in, he reclaimed his career. Now we hope to have him for the rest of his career or whatever. Mm-hmm. The other is he knows the kid. He knows the kid has talent. He knows the kid can do this. And he wants to give him a chance to get his career back so he can go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But at least he went, you know, since he knows the kid, at least he brought him in and had him, you know, revive his career. So how much of it was one and how much of it was the other? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if I was Nelson Aguilar, I was talking to RJ about this earlier. If I was Nelson Aguilar, I would do a short deal, a decent money short deal, because he'll get more money in a couple of years when the cap's up and there's not so many big ticket wide receivers that's going to bring his value down.
And it can prove he wasn't a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
It makes too much sense. That's what I'm saying. It makes too much sense.
I was like, oh, Carl's coming after you, Juan.
Oh, I wanted to hear why it wouldn't make sense.
That is you're spot on. There is absolutely, I can't find nothing. I can find no flaw in that. I believe that too. I agree.
Because even if he gets hurt or something this year, he can still pull back to the year when he was healthy. But there won't be as many big ticket wide receivers, and there's going to be a bigger cap.
I agree. There's nothing I can add to that.
All right, RJ, you're out. Carl, you're in.
Right. You're going to have to cut this interview short before I lose my job. So how much do you take into – I'm sure you saw the news, you know, a couple of weeks ago from Vic Tafer of The Athletic of how Nelson Aguilar blew up in the locker room. He was the one that was loud about it when the Raiders were skidding, you know, late in the season. Does it – you know, we're starting to get like varying reports. Like some players were saying, oh, it didn't quite go that way, but some people were saying it was close. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, but I think there's smoke, there's fire. I think Nelson Aguilar, as he should be unhappy with the team that's falling apart late in the season. As a former player, as a guy who actually played, like, is that something that you think is going to make him not want to sign back with the Raiders? Is like, where do you think his mindset at is? Is it like just purely money? Like whoever gives him the most money is where he goes? Or do you think there's gonna be more to it for him?
Okay. Well, when it comes to the, what happened in halftime or whatever in the locker room, I give it one of these. Because you guys have played before, right?
Yeah.
High school. Before,
yeah.
Okay. Does it change? I mean,
locker rooms only change.
How often does that happen in the locker room in halftime when you're losing and you're getting dealt with? Mm-hmm. How often does that happen?
Yeah.
I didn't play in the NFL, but in college, something in that locker room is getting broken. If we're getting blown out,
if you're messing up, someone's gonna tell you you're messing up, and that's what you want. You want your brothers to keep you in line, right?
Yes.
That's a family.
There you go. That's all that is. So that has zero bearing on if he wants to come back, and I believe he does want to come back. The problem, you know, it's on Gruden. It's on Gruden and Mayock if he's coming back or not.
My worry is that Gruden tends to get a hard-on for some of these players, and he overpays for them, man. And I'm thinking,
Gruden?
Come on, man.
Stop it. No, you're crazy.
I am kind of crazy. That's true.
Jason Witten, Marcus Mariota, you're telling me those guys?
Oh, my God, dude.
Okay, you know what, though? You're not wrong. Tell me a coach and a GM that doesn't.
No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
But the thing is the reaches, the overpays for that. Okay. We're not in a position cap wise to do that, to spend that much money on a wide receiver who's not, I mean, a proven number one wide receiver.
True that. True. You know what though? Also, I mean, because look at.
Let's hear it, baby. Come on.
I love him, so I hate to even say this, but you know, look at Gabe Jackson. He's making left tackle money.
He's making big money. Yeah,
and he's a guard, and he hasn't. And let's keep it 100. He hasn't. The last couple of years, he's been kind of hobbling around, playing hurt, and he hasn't been what he was earlier in his career.
Yeah, the run offense hasn't been as good lately.
But what I'm, that was McKenzie contract that he's playing under, but. I'll just say this. At that time that he came along and performed well, and at the state that the Raiders ran at that time, you have to overpay.
Yeah.
You have to give him. Otherwise,
he's gone.
You know, because think about it, man. Remember Amari Cooper?
Yep.
Of course.
Okay, remember how great he wasn't with the Raiders?
Mr. Drops a lot.
Yeah.
And remember how and you see how great he is now at Dallas.
His first game went off.
Okay. No, don't get me wrong. He's still not consistent. If you put a good corner on him, he will disappear. But he's still better over there. And I'll tell you why. You go to a team like the Raiders that have been losing and you know, whatever, and you know, in Alabama, you used to winning, and you know, it's not true anymore because it's the Vegas thing, but you have better facilities in Alabama than they had in Oakland.
Yeah. You probably had better facilities in high school than they had in Oakland.
Your toilets didn't overflow. Yeah, man,
I went to that stadium in 2011, and that place was a dive back in 2011.
My dorm room in college was better than going to the bathroom at the Coliseum.
I hear you. Yes, that's all true. But remember the picture of Amari Cooper when he first got drafted to the Raiders, when he went to sign his rookie deal. Do you remember the picture?
Nah, I don't remember it.
What? Oh, my goodness. You, man. Man,
I drink a lot. Like, I forget things.
He looked, okay, I'll just put it like this. He looked like Mike Tyson during the stare down when he was getting ready to fight Michael Spinks back in the day. He was, when he went to go sign his deal with the Cowboys. And remember, everybody was talking about Amari Cooper and how all business he was. And, you know, he was this no-nonsense. He was just a no-nonsense type of dude. And he just tended to his business and did it, you know, and that was that. But when he went to – first time I ever saw him smile was when he was with the Cowboys.
You didn't know he had teeth until that day.
There you go. There you go. The first time I saw him smile was with the Cowboys. And yeah, so when you have – that thing that the Raiders had going at that time, up and you know what, up until now, I'm gonna say, because I don't think they're gonna have to overpay, you know, as much as they had to back then.
A little more buzz now around the team, I think.
Yeah,
there you go.
New stadium,
no
new
income city. Tax in Nevada.
No income tax in Nevada. I'm
just getting ready to say that. Yep.
Yeah. As you know, Carl, us California boys paying our 18%.
Oh yeah, brother enjoys that.
how much do you take into, because I hear it all the time, Gruden's got such a complicated system, super complicated system, rookies struggle grasping it, and that's kind of what I always blamed Amari Cooper's struggles on, was like, oh, he's just in a complicated system and he's not really grasping it. I'm buying what you're saying of how he's used to being in the best college football team ever, and now he's with the Raiders that are struggling. Do you think that's another – is that overblown? Is it correctly blown, like how complicated Gruden's system is and how it affects his younger players?
You know what? I don't think it was a system because he played in – I don't think his I don't think his system was that different in Alabama. They ran a West Coast offense over there.
They sure did.
Now, sure, Gruden's going to get a little bit more wordy with his, you know, with his green right – 200 Z jet, you know, all that.
Why banana?
Yeah, Spider 2 Y banana. There you go. With all that craziness to it. But really, the bottom line, when you go from system to system like that, for the most part is, oh, okay, that was this at Alabama. You know what I mean? Or that was that at Alabama.
That means this, that means that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you're exchanging Spanish for English. And yeah.
Get that translation app on your phone.
Yeah. So I don't think that was it. And at the same time, look how many balls he was dropping in 2017 before Gruden even sniffed, you know, Oakland. True. So, you know, that I just think he was a unhappy player because he didn't want to. Most Southerners, yeah, I understand. But a lot of Southerners don't really like Cali either. You know, Northern Cali.
Culture shock. Yeah, it's a culture shock for sure.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm not saying that was it, but there's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it plays a part, right?
Yeah, you go from the South to California. You go from the winningest program ever to – oh God, the losing this program in the last 20 years or whatever, 15 years. Yeah. That was a little hard for him. And I just don't think that he was with it. I don't think he was really with it.
Well, it's hard to rev it up when you're getting your shit pushed in every week. You know, it's just hard. I mean, I went through it when I was playing, and it's just like, The coach's words just stop ringing. Like after a while, it's like, yo, man, I bought into it, and we're still getting pounded on. Like what else you got to say? It's the same thing over and over again. Like after a while, it's hard to get ramped up.
Yeah. Also, think about it. Okay, Derek Carr was by himself, and then Khalil Mack was by himself on the defense in 2014, and then. But it was 2-14, right? They were horrible.
Yep.
Okay. Then Amari Cooper comes over, and they go 7-9. Things is getting a little better. And then 2016, yeah, playoff. Pew, 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 pew. Yep.
Yeah.
So now it's like, okay, we did it. We climbed the mountain. Mm-hmm. We there.
Yeah.
And when they fell, you know, oh man, we back to this again.
Yep.
That's why I wonder what's going to happen with Amari Cooper now. Like the Cowboys, like started falling apart, obviously with like, you know, Dak Prescott going down and stuff, But he's
the
whole, still
the line going down. People
the line going down. Like, but there was Cooper. Amari still had a pretty decent season. Like, I wonder, like, even when things went down. I mean, maybe it's because it's the Cowboys. You're in that giant stadium, and you know, like Dallas just loves him. He's kind of in the South again. You know, I wonder if like he's able to like they're failing there, but it feels maybe just enough at home where he's able to feel comfortable.
I'm gonna tell you what part of it is. Who's a corner in the NFC East?
That's true. Touche.
Yeah.
Touche. Yeah.
And who was he playing against when he was in the AFC West?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Best of the best.
Marcus Peters.
Yep. Exactly. He had a gauntlet to run through in the AFC West. Mm-hmm. But now he's over in the NFC East. Do they have a corner as good as us?
Yeah, it's rough. Over
I know,
there,
and I know I can't cover.
Well, speaking of defense, obviously, you know, it was terrible this season. And it's been like historically terrible for the Raiders. They had, like, two top 10 defenses in the last like 20 years or something like that. It's just been awful forever.
Don't wonder why we haven't been winning.
That's right. Like it's not rocket science, right? You can't stop anybody, you know? Uh-huh. Like, doesn't matter how good your offense is, you can't stop anybody. But with us going from like Paul Gunther to Gus Bradley, is this personnel? Obviously, hopefully we get a really good free safety, some really good edge rushers, some really good defensive tech. Like, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're able to sign some good free agents and draft well. But can this defense take a giant step forward generally with the roster we have going from Gunther to Bradley? Because Paul Gunther so bad that this defense is being held back by him and Gus Bradley can help it succeed? Or is this the personnel so bad that defensive coordinator is probably not that big of a deal?
Who do you want to go at that first?
You.
Okay.
This is your show, Carl. I'm sick of hearing from him. I hear from him every week.
You don't want to hear from me anymore. He hears it from me every week, bro. You don't want to hear from me.
Okay, the new face is
you're
coming.
You're the mediator here. I'm okay. You're our divorce lawyer. Him and I are trying to break this up.
I'll say this. They're going to get exponentially better. They're going
exponentially. That makes me feel
exponentially
better.
Exponentially. Think about it, though. If they finish 16, is that not exponentially better?
Oh yeah!
If they're normally below average, I'll be doing backflips in my hallway if they're like 20th. Like, that'd be great.
Okay, but here, okay. Now I'm gonna keep going with this. Okay, number one, you saw that. I'm pretty sure you did your homework on Gus Bradley and the turnarounds that he's made on these defenses that he's gone to. Now, add to that. We have a Bradley system fits, particularly our secondary, better.
I agree.
This hot garbage cover six crap that Paul Gunther was doing where, you know, you got your corners and your safeties backed up in the end zone on third and two. And that ain't going to happen no more.
Yeah.
They have a, you know, the cover one, cover three, press bail.
Yeah, they have that challenge defense. They're gonna challenge you up the line. Yeah.
Now, that's what Damon Arnett ran at Ohio State. That's what. Why is the name not coming?
Trayvon Mullen.
Trayvon Mullen. There you go. That's why that's what Trayvon Mullen ran in Clemson. They pressed and they bailed. Mm-hmm. So now we got something that fits the players.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it because Trayvon Mullen was the number one bump and run corner by Pro Football Focus in the first 5 weeks of the season. I don't know what he fell to, but he was number one in the number one press corner in the first 5 weeks of the season, five or six, whatever in that range somewhere. Now, what happened to the bumping and the running?
Out the window, man. Out the window.
He was running. He wasn't bumping that much.
There you go. And then Arnett, he was the best press corner coming out of college. And then what's the first thing they do? they put him in off man and in zone.
Yeah,
and then he gets and then he gets cooked by old boy in Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. You know,
that's not his strength. Yeah.
No, that's not what he does. You have to have okay. That's why. That's you know. There's only obviously there's only one Deion. That's but that's why he was so special. It's because not only was he fast, but obviously he's a road runner. But he can play press. He can plant his foot and go get it in zone.
Yeah.
Or he can, and he had good route recognition skills. He was smart.
Smart, yeah.
And so he could play off man. And just like Richard Sherman, he could play off man when he wants to because he's not as fast as Deion, but he's smart.
He's smart. He gets to the spot.
Exactly. So he can come out there and just look at you and say, okay, he's going to run a post. And that's the kind of route recognition you need to play off man. Mm-hmm. Arnett doesn't have that. Mullen, his route recognition is better than Arnett's, but he really doesn't have that. Not to the level of a Deion or a Richard Sherman or, you know, even D'Angelo Hall. He was good at route recognition, you know, when he was playing an off man.
Yeah. What do you think about Abram? I think one of Gus Bradley's big tasks coming in is to really find a role for him and to get the best out of him. I'm thinking almost like a hybrid, like safety linebacker type of thing for him. A little move him around. So he gets cooked a lot, and he did get cooked a lot in coverage.
Man, let me tell you something. Don't worry about Well, if he relaxes, because as a matter of fact, let me shamelessly plug this video that I'm coming out with tomorrow. It's on Abram.
Please do.
I can't wait to see it.
And it's about he tried too hard. Think about it. He came up with all that swag on
Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks.
Yeah. Tom Brady could be my daddy.
Still has that swag. Still talks that. Still bumps the gums. Has that swag. I like it. And he's very skilled. I know you couldn't tell this year, but he's very skilled at in man coverage. I broke him down when he was in college. He has excellent range. You saw that when he in the first Kansas City game when they threw that deep ball to Tyreek Hill. He had some range. He went and got it.
Yeah.
Now and he has all that, but his problem is he can tackle.
He's a missile, man. He's a missile downhill.
Yeah. But that's the thing. When he's tackling, he tries too hard for the big hit. He wants to explode and then the ball to fly out and that's great. But you can't always have that. You gotta, everything
make the play.
Everything is national football. Just third and 10 and third and 1, but when to go for the big hit. When to just make the tackle, exactly. And so he has to settle down and not try so hard because he put that number 24 on. You already know you put 24 on it with the Raiders. You got to bring something, and he was trying to.
Ball out.
I like the fact that he wants to bring it. I like the fact that he wants to be great, but now you just got to slow him down. You got to say, man, you know what? Do your job. just do your job because he was trying to do everybody else's job. Like when Patrick Mahomes scrambled and he running to go get, and they completed the ball in the zone because he's running after, he's trying to make the play on Patrick Mahomes. Nah, you got to let somebody else do that. That's where trusting your teammates comes in, which his teammates on defense weren't very good.
Trustworthy.
But you gotta trust. You gotta learn how to trust your teammates. He has to learn to trust his teammates. Okay, somebody else is gonna go get that. I'm gonna stay in my zone. So if he throws it, because he'd have picked that off if he'd have been in the zone, or Mahomes wouldn't have thrown it.
Yeah, he wouldn't have thrown it. What do you think about the reports about how wide open Gunther's defense was? How he didn't game plan for a specific team, and we heard who was it? It was Compton, right? Compton wrote that they had like 30 to 35 third down calls for one
per just game,
just 30 to 35 just third down calls. And I would be confused as hell too. Like, you think that was part of it?
Man, come on, man. You know that was part of it. You know, no, that was all of it. That was all part of it. That was all of it.
That's what I want
to
hear.
And I thank you for saying that, because that brings me to my next point. And that was, look at it. Okay. We expect this out of, you know, even though he did try too hard, and that made it, because you, as you know, when you try too hard, sometimes you screw up worse than you would have if you didn't try at all.
Yep.
Because you're just trying, you know, you're just trying too hard. You're just too tight. And just like for, you know, for example, when he's in off-man coverage, he's jumping at every little move. And then next thing you know, he's, you know, the guy catches the ball deep because he went for two of the three moves that was put on him. And so, and what I'm saying, I guess what I want to say is that when you have, you have a guy that's like, that was essentially his rookie year. And he's in. If a guy like Corey Littleton, who was all that in just the year before with the Rams, when I broke his film down, that was the most fun I ever had breaking down a player. Because he was I thought I was watching a highlight reel, but this was just regular, tape. That dude was 1 minute's an interception, 1 minute's fumble recovery, the next minute he's forcing a fumble, the next minute it's a sack, next minute it's, you know, a pass defense, next minute it's a tackle. This dude was all over the doggone place.
Yeah.
Now, what did Gunther turn him into?
Confused.
Okay.
Lost.
So my point is, if he turned him into that, then what's Abram going to be?
That's true.
Yeah, good point.
No, that makes
basically a rookie player. Yeah.
You know, what's he going to be? What's Arnett going to be? Mullen, man.
I like Trayvon. I like him a lot.
I love Mullen, man. I love all three of the players, including Abram. I'm not putting last year on Abram, even though he tried too hard. But when you have a system that's just simple, and not just simple, but something that you've run before, something that they ran in college, you're going to see a different secondary. It's going to be different.
That was one of the reasons why I felt like there was going to be a big jump this year. When you talk about Gruden, how he runs his teams, Gruden is basically the head coach of the offense. That's it. He doesn't really focus on the defense at all. He's not really in the meetings. He doesn't really focus on it at all. Basically, if you're a defensive coordinator on a Gruden team, you're basically a head coach just for the defense. He kind of leaves that alone. So Gus Bradley does have that head coaching experience, right? And he's a better teacher. He's a better game planner. And you have, I mean, how many top three round picks do you have? One, two, or first, second, or third round picks do you have on that defense? A lot. You've got a lot of players out there. Just maybe, like you said, they're just overly confused about going in. They're young. Now they're going to have someone who's going to break it down, teach them a little bit more. I'm having a lot of high hopes for this defense coming up.
So do I. I mean, the players fitting the scheme is number one. You can't have somebody do something that he's not good at. You know, how am I going to, you know, if you're a plumber, if you're a plumber, why am I going to have you fix my stove?
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
You know?
Yeah.
That's not what you do. So if it's not what you do, I can't ask you to do that and expect a good job. Mm-hmm. I mean, now the secondary is going to be much better. And, you know, I'm actually expecting some little something from the D-line too. And I don't think the front seven is as bad as the non-sacks showed. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, when did a Paul Gunther defense ever sack the quarterback a lot? Did they sack LaHore? Did they sack back a lot in Cincinnati when he was coordinator?
No.
I don't remember seeing a lot of sacks.
They were a swarming defense. They weren't really a sack defense.
Yes. And they had Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap and still didn't have that many sacks. Mm-hmm. And so I'm expecting, and it's crazy because, gosh, I forgot the guy's name. Ez something, Ez on Twitter. I don't know if you ever.
Not sure.
Well, either way. He pointed out something to me. And because, you know, the Raiders ran that defense before when Ken Norton was the coordinator with Jack Del Rio. Mm-hmm. But they ran that system a little differently than what Paul Gunther does. See, with Norton and Del Rio, they had a Justin Ellis. They had him on the nose at the one technique. And then, you know, then they had, you know, the 5 and 3 and the, all that. Mm-hmm. Now, with Bradley, which was what the guy pointed out to me, and I was, Bradley doesn't use a huge one technique. He uses an undersized guy at the one technique, and he puts his nose out at the three technique. He uses, you know, he puts his big space heater out and at the three technique.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, wow, we got some, you know, and then he usually has a linebacker sized guy, you know, playing the Leo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. This is, and you know what? I'm just basing everything on off of what we have right now. Mm-hmm. And okay, I think that one technique, undersized, who I'm hoping, because I've wanted to see him on the field for the last 3 years, but it seemed like every time he makes a play, they take him out of the game. Mm-hmm. And that's Maurice Hurst.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, he can be that guy if he fits the mold of what Bradley does. You know what I mean? And so, okay, you put him there at that one technique. Now, do you – and, of course, on we already know Furl's going to be on that base hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that three technique, do you think Jonathan Hankins is coming back?
You don't want too much money, man.
Yeah.
You think so?
I don't think so. I think he's going to want too much money, dude, honestly.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, what do you think of drafting a guy like Christian Barmore?
I'll take him if he's there.
That's a big, you know, he's 6'5", 310.
Big kid, yeah.
He can get up to 320. He can eat a couple of biscuits and eat
no problem, man.
320, because that's about the size of the guy that Bradley goes with at that mm-hmm. at that position. So you put him there since you say Hankins is going to go. I didn't know what to think, so I'm going to go ahead and roll with you on that.
All right, let's go with that then.
And then the Leo. Now, I don't think it's a slam dunk that Max Crosby is going to be the Leo.
No?
Okay.
No. Nah, because okay. You need to be explosive to be a Leo.
He's got a motor, but he's not that explosive.
Yeah, I talked about that a couple weeks ago.
I'm talking about, you know,
twitchy.
The guy that can be on the quarterback while you're still in your stance, kind of explosive.
Yeah.
So.
And you're right. Even if they're a little smaller, Bradley will put them out there because that's they're what quicker. I'm saying. Because they're quicker.
Out. Yes, he puts those tweeners out there at the Leo, and. Thing about Crosby, okay, if he loses weight and gets back down to 255 when he was at the combine and he ran a 4.6, then maybe we got something.
Yeah.
But they put all that weight on him. And, you know, I understand he played with the torn labrum and everything. And so that affected his play. And I believe that, you know, but at the same time, I thought putting all that weight on him slowed him down a little bit last year. I don't know what you guys saw, but I thought he was a little less quick, a little less explosive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it, but it's also, you know, he keeps getting hurt too. So like you want to put weight on him to try to make him more durable, a little stronger, but it slows him down. It's like,
you know,
damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Bigger doesn't always mean less injury prone. Sometimes bigger means you get hurt more.
Yeah. All right. Maybe.
Yeah. That goes to another conversation. Remind me to have that with you after this.
Have that conversation next time.
I talk about Max Crosby. I strained my labrum. God damn. I have no idea how he played with a torn labrum. No clue. I strained it once, and I was telling these guys, man, I didn't jerk off for like 2 weeks. With my business arm, and I couldn't do it.
That's a new record. That is Soto's brand new record.
I just strained it. I didn't.
It's like a 99-yard rushing touchdown. It's a record that'll never be broken.
Never be broken.
Oh my goodness! Boy, you stupid.
All right, Carl.
That's why I'm here.
we could do this all day long. Loved having you on, Carl. We really appreciate it, Carl Cockrum. Make sure you check him out at Raiders Films on YouTube. One of the best breakdowns of all things Raiders. We got a Jonathan Abram video coming out that I can't wait to watch.
Yep. Tomorrow.
All right, Carl. Appreciate it, bud. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Carl. Go Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks again, Carl Cockrum from the YouTube channel Raider Films. He's also told us that he's going to be doing a show kind of like this one with Elias Trail and him disputing Raider football on his YouTube channel. So make sure you subscribe to Raider Films on YouTube. Dude, he got me like legit. I don't know him that well. It's the first time I ever talked to him. But unless he's just like the most positive and optimistic person in the world and just thinks everything's going to be great, he got me thinking like things are going to be all right in the future. Like Henry Ruggs, his rookie year wasn't great because of injuries, how bad Paul Gunther was and how well like the team that we have fits into Gus Bradley's system, how the defensive line can step up. Like I'm legit less worried about our defense than I thought I really would be.
The big thing for me speaking with Carl is the whys. He's able to back up everything he said, and everything made sense, and everything he said was true. They did play more of a bump and run technique, Arnett and Mullins. We both knew that Abram was trying too hard.
Yeah.
He said he has a film coming, a Raider film coming out on Abram and why he's better in coverage than people think. I'm ready to see that one. I'm ready to go on that
one. The idea that Abram is fixable, I hope that's true. If he can convince me this, because you know, like we've talked about this on the show multiple times, how Jonathan Abram, he'd come in and like you wanted to like him because his attitude is great. He wants to kill it. He wants to kill every ball carrier. His hits are fun and exciting, but then like you look at the numbers and you watch him in coverage, and you're like, oh God. Oh my God, he's terrible. Like he's awful. Like he's what a waste of a first rounder. But Carl said he's fixable, which is the right system. Put him in a position to succeed. That would be so great if like this guy I want to love, Jonathan Abram, can deliver for us.
Man, if Gus Bradley is able to come in here and put the pieces in the right place, put the squares with the squares and the circles with the circles and making sure everyone's in the right place and ready to go. Do you think Paul Gunther's ever gonna get a job again? Honestly,
I mean, maybe like scooping ice cream at Baskin Robbins. Like,
not football.
Any job? Oh, not football. Oh yeah, football job. Oh God, no, no. Scooping ice cream at Allegiant Stadium.
Yeah.
No.
There's always money in the banana stand,
and that's why I've been saying for as long as this show has been around, I'm like, I would think that coaches, defensive coordinators would be knocking down the door to have the defensive coordinator job for the Raiders, because you're filling in after Paul Gunther, who was awful. Like you're going to be better only because, like, at worst case scenario, because you're not as bad as Paul Gunther. The offense is great, which will generally bail you. You know, it can solve a lot of warts for you, get you some W's when the offense carries the weight of the game and the defense just has to not screw up that badly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you get carte blanche, like you keep mentioning, because John Gruden doesn't want to do anything with the defense. You get to basically be the czar of defense, right? Like it's a job that I think people really, really want. And we got a legit dude in Bradley that Carl Cochran's really excited about.
I mean, it added an extra layer to what I already felt about Bradley being able to come in because he has the pedigree of being able to do so, but also the whys and whys on his, on Bradley's end, and also the why it would work on the Raiders players that they currently have in.
Yeah.
But I digress. I want to talk to you a little bit about one thing that I sent you earlier this week. I know you're a big numbers guy. I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, and again, I'm like, I hate saying this. I don't like talking about other people's jobs, but nothing personal. It's all about the Raiders moving forward. So I have a list here, and we were talking about, you and I were discussing in our quick show about Russell Wilson, about how it can work and how we can make it work. Mm-hmm. And I did a little number crunching.
Okay. Let's see. Right? Let's see what you got going there, Mr. Calculator.
Okay. Wow, so one thing that we didn't calculate when we traded Carr was his salary leaving as well.
Yeah.
So what I'm looking at is this. Okay. So
because he's no guaranteed money. So it's, but there's still salary type.
It's still salary money. Yeah. So we have,
there's no dead money issue.
Dead money. Correct. So
Carr, small amount.
Carr, 19.5 million. Mm-hmm. Trent Brown's cap hits 13.75.
Yep.
Terrell Williams is 11.5.
That one hurts the most. Oh, God.
Right? LaMarcus Joyner, 9.6.
Yep, gone.
If we can trade Marcus Mariota, 10.6.
Yeah. Richie he's cut, no question.
Okay. Richie Incognito is a 5 mil, right? Jalen Richard is 3.75. I don't think we can justify paying him that much anymore.
Not when Jacobs is making 1.5.
Like, you can't.
The third stringer's making 2 million more than the first stringer.
No. And you need that money elsewhere. You can get a young guy out of the draft. You can get a young player. Yeah. Jeff Heath, 3 mil. Carl Nassib, 3.5. Those players add up to $80.3 million. Right? And none of these players are intricate. I mean, you're going to replace Carr with another player, but the rest of them, not intricate players on the team. Now, what I did,
we desperately need a right tackle. Like that's a gaping hole. But
good played well. He played well. I want to say well played good. But look,
gotta re-sign him.
Yeah, the one player I really want back that I think we can get back at a low price because we talked about it last time. He's a little bit older, coming off an injury, is Richie Incognito.
Yeah,
when he was healthy a couple of years ago, he was a beast. I think we can get him around the 3.5 range.
He's due five.
Doable. I think it's doable if we could cut or restructure the contract. So if we do this, if we don't restructure Russell Wilson whatsoever, okay, we don't do it whatsoever, $32 million against the cap, which is a big number.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, that's $13 million of that is on a bonus. Can you stretch that bonus out? I'm thinking you can. Who knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. So we got Russell Wilson at 32, Juju Smith-Schuster at 15.
Okay,
I think that's about fair. That's fair. What do you think?
That's. I mean, it's so hard to say because again, like, there's so many free agent wide receivers, draft. We don't know what the cap's gonna be.
All we need is some freaking idiot team like the Jags or the freaking the Eagles to just give one of these guys some shit.
After Amari got like 20, man. Everyone's just like, every receiver's like, especially how cocky receivers are. Like, they think they're the man. Like, oh, pay me. Like,
especially ones. Yeah. Okay, let's just say we can get away with 15.
I think it's reasonable.
Richard Sherman at 9. Mm-hmm. That's about right. Justin Simmons at 15.
Big one.
That's about right. So we're worth it, but big one. Mark Ingram at 5.
I mean, you're still making $3.5 million more than the starter.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
I feel if we have Mark Ingram in the backfield, he's going to be more. It's going to be more of a 1-1A type, like there was with the Saints. I think it's going to be something more like that. And that's going to really, and all you have to do is point to the Saints and Kamara killing it and becoming that breakout star and say, hey, Jacobs, is this going to be you? We just need to have that hammer to what you do. You don't have to be that hammer anymore. So all those salaries put together, including the, and this is if we don't restructure Russell Wilson's bonus money, $79 million.
$1 million free to give to you and me for coming up with this. Perfect.
$1 million for Aguilar getting one. Another million Aguilar, 1.3.
There you go.
$300,000 increase.
Enjoy, Aggie. Hey, I mean, that's a roster. That's a roster I'm down to pursue. You know, I still don't think Russell Wilson's the way to go. I think
no, either. Like, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, honestly. Yeah, I hope that.
I don't think he's going anywhere. But like, even if he's available, like, again, Derek Carr, it's just like he's proven. He's mastered the offense. He's played great, better than good. He has played great, right? We know his limitations, right? He's going to fumble. He's not going to be mobile, right? But he's not the dink and dunk game manager checkdown dude anymore. Like when he needs to go, he goes, right? Just give me. Yeah.
My thing with that is he throws the ball deep when it's in the offense. He pushes the ball when it's in the offense, which is fine. But there are times like late in the second quarter when you're playing the Bucks and it's still a tight game and you go three and out, three possessions in a row, and that gives them the chance to get the lead and extend that lead before halftime. And then they get the ball back after half and just make it a fucking laughing game. It's like there's situations like that where you need to identify the situation and push the ball down the field, even if it's out of the offense a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a squad we can win. We can go to the playoffs and win a lot of games with that squad you just mentioned.
And even with, like, let's say you don't get, you know, you don't do the trade. Mm-hmm. So you're 10 million less, figure it out. You don't get Justin Simmons and Juju Smith-Schuster, but you can bring back Aguilar and maybe May or something like that, a little bit lesser price. It's still going to be an upgrade, you know. But yeah, man, I like it. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. It'd be going the other way. We'd have more money to spend because Russell Wilson would be more expensive. Maybe you can get a little. Maybe you get a D tackle.
Offensive line depth would be nice. Offensive
line depth. Man, you know what really kills me about this offensive line is young guys. When I see a couple of our guys playing at other teams and it's like, you are on our bench. What the fuck are you doing starting for this team? And you're killing it. Mm-hmm. Like Figueroa. Oh my God, dude. That really hurt.
Yeah. It'd be nice when those days end, when everyone who leaves the Raiders just like takes off. It's like, all right, well, we're going to take off. We'll be back next week. Again, thank you, Carl Cochran, for joining us, opening our eyes a little bit. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. All right, a big thank you to Carl Cochran of Raiders Films for joining us. I feel so much better about how the season could potentially go. Again, remember to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, give us a follow on our YouTube channel as well. Like, subscribe, all those wonderful things. Giant internet high five for doing all that. Until next time, later.